You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
Now we go to human health. And if you've got questions, send them in now, because Dr. Maura Finn is with us from the Ennis Family Medical Centre. Dr. Finn, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm very good. And thank you very much for joining us. We said amidst the recent warnings that we would talk today about meningitis. And this, I talked about it yesterday on air, people know my situation, but it's not an unusual one. Children who were born, as I understand it, after October 2016 have been vaccinated for meningitis B. Those who were born before that haven't got the vaccination, and if they want it, they have to pay for it. Maybe just step back before we get into that side of things. Meningitis is a dangerous bug, and it's out there at the moment.
Yes. Now, it's always out there, okay? And meningitis is caused by many different organisms. What it is it's an infection or inflammation of the lining of the brain and spinal cord, so the protective lining over it, which is called the meningism, the meninges, and that becomes infected for some reason. Now, it can happen for multiple different reasons. There's viral causes, there's bacterial causes. It can happen because of even some very unusual fungal and parasitic infections. So there's multiple different causes of it. Yeah. People are very aware of meningitis in the forms of meningitis C or B, because they would have been the ones, when I started working, it was our greatest fear with kids. You know, if there was a child who was sick with a high temperature, it could always possibly be meningitis. And I saw several cases in years gone past, because it's a very serious illness. It causes death very frequently. It causes limb damage, where children in particular have to have parts of their limbs amputated because of a shutdown to the peripheral blood supply. Mm. It can cause deafness, blindness, all sorts of really nasty complications. So it's very people are aware of it. It's in their psyche still. Now, since 2000, there has been a vaccine for meningitis C, which is one of the subgroups that causes this bacterial meningitis. Meningitis B, that subgroup, has only been vaccinated since October 2016, as you said. Mm. So the incidence has gone down dramatically since the Men C vaccine has been brought in, but the meningitis B is still, it's a new, it's still out there, and that vaccine is only new.
It's most prevalent amongst young children, as I understand it?
Yeah, up until five, you're more likely to be exposed, and teenagers then as well. Adolescents have, there's a peak there as well. Older people as well.
Okay.
But up into a year of age is actually you're most vulnerable. So that's why I'm not going to try and be an advocate as to what sort of meningitis or immunisation policies there have been made. But the reason why I believe there isn't a catch up is because the youngest children, the children under one, are being covered because it has been available since 2016. However, you will have families where you'll have one child vaccinated, one child not, you know, and it's a very unsettling situation. And, you know, up until five, they are still vulnerable, and they're vulnerable again as teenagers. So, you know, my children, you know, are teenagers, and they, you know, they have actually been given one vaccine. I need to give them the booster. I haven't told them that yet. But, you know, so it's a very real concern for people. And, you know, vaccines causes a lot of kind of dispute and discordant kind of conversation. It's always interesting to me that this is such a real disease that is still there in people's psyche. It is actually something people want. Mm. People are fighting for this vaccine, as opposed to the anti-vaxxers who are fighting against vaccines.
I think that's because, in part, of the old information campaign, with that very striking image of the rash under the glass that wouldn't fade, which is, and I know there's other symptoms, and I will give you a chance to say them, but that's the one that stick in people's minds. And I think because of the fears that people would naturally have when you talked about it, as to what can happen, and that's why they'll fight for it, in my own opinion anyway. Can I ask you, though, and I know there is significant costs to the vaccine, and I will put those to one side just for the purposes of this question. From a medical point of view, is it best for children, even if they're outside the screening program at the moment, to get the meningitis B vaccine, if possible?
In my opinion, yes. But I'm very aware that there is
a significant cost
involved in it. And that cost is because what we've been doing in the last few days, but actually over the last couple of years, we often do this. We write a prescription for the vaccine. The patient's parent brings it to the pharmacy, they collect it and bring it back, and we give it to them then. So the cost is the actual manufacturer's cost of the vaccine. And it varies a little, but not an awful lot. And then there's there would be the fee for nurse administration, but that's the only fee that you know, we would take out of it.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, I mean, to be honest, across the board, it's a no-brainer. If there's a vaccine, you get it. You know,
has there been many calls? Do you know, to the surgery?
Lots and lots and lots, yeah. I've probably written about 10 prescriptions in just this week, you know, so...
For people who decided to spend a few hundred euro on each of their children.
And it is, you know, it could be 300-400 euros they're spending, you know, so... It's unfortunate. I don't know. I mean, I think there may be some sort of catch-up at some stage, but even if it does, there'll need to be political kind of clout behind that, and then that will take time as well. So this particular crisis right now, you know, if you want to protect your child, you have to kind of do it yourself. The other thing is that this does circle every year, though.
That's what I was going to ask you. When you said the word crisis, cut across you, is it really a crisis? And people have lost lives and people have been seriously ill, and that's awful. And I know that is dreadful for each of those situations. But is it any worse than
Well,
than
when
normal?
It's in the media, it's always a crisis. So
because we amplify it.
We make it
a crisis.
There is always cases of meningitis, and there are always cases of other forms of meningitis that we have no vaccinations for. And actually, some of the vaccines that are in the childhood vaccination program that have been for years and years and years are against forms of meningitis. Like the Hib vaccine, it protects against a haemophilus form of meningitis, which is a very serious form of meningitis. So meningitis is an illness caused by multiple different entities. So it is always out there. If you hear that somebody has had, unfortunately, a case of meningitis and even worse, has died, you immediately assume it's the type of meningitis that we can vaccinate against. It may not be.
Sure.
So, you know, the reporting of this can be maybe not completely correct.
And even if, and I've already said it now, we're doing it in our family, but even if we get that vaccine, there are still strains of meningitis that my son will not be vaccinated against. He will still be exposed to those, and there's not much...
Yeah, but what you're doing is you're kind of... It's like an insurance policy. Basically, you're trying to cut down the risks and cut down the amount of exposure you can have. And there's, you know, in my opinion, you make life as safe as you possibly can, and then outside of that, you have to kind of take on the risks.
The most important question I'm going to ask you, what are the symptoms of meningitis?
Okay, well, this is really interesting. People talk about the rash now, and can we just park the rash for a second and I'll get back to it. Meningitis, like I said, is an infection of the lining of the protective lining around your brain and spinal cord. So the most common symptom in a child or adult, forget about newborns now, would be headache, listlessness, tiredness, maybe vomiting, maybe stiff neck. They're very, very common. And they're signs of meningitis, okay? What happened with newborns, obviously they present differently. They're usually very kind of, they're pale, not feeding well, can be irritable. You know, the signs with small children are always much vaguer.
More subtle, I would
imagine,
yeah.
You know, if you're worried at all about your child, a small child, you bring it in, you know?
Absolutely.
But the rash comes when you have the meningitis infection has spread beyond the lining of the brain, and it has formed, it's developed into what's called a septicemia. So the infection has gone into the bloodstream, and that's a completely different thing. So when you have that rash, you are actually extremely ill.
Okay, so you're not waiting for the rash.
You never wait for the rash. You know, if God forbid you have that rash, you know, you need to be in hospital immediately. So the rash is, in some ways, it's important people know about it, but it's not what you wait for, because you know that's you've gone up to a completely different level then.
But listlessness, feeling stiff,
stiff neck in particular.
Stiff neck in particular.
Yeah,
that could be also flu-y as well, couldn't it?
It could be, but you see, this is the thing, and you know, a meningitis can be caused by flu or viral symptoms as well. So there is a crossover all the time. This is where, you know, googling symptoms doesn't help a lot of time. You know, you need to be seen. High temperature will be a fairly regular symptom, but it doesn't always have to be. And again, like you say, it could be part of a flu or any other infection. I suppose when we see a child with meningitis, you know that they're sick. There's a difference about them, you know. But the headache, stiff neck, tiredness, really off form, not eating, maybe vomiting, because they may be, you know, they'll have an intolerance to light sometimes as well, or sound. But again, you know, any signs like that, you bring them in. Don't wait, and don't wait for a rash.
Absolutely. And that's the most important thing. My child was born February 2015. Does he need to get the top up? He certainly hasn't got the meningitis B vaccine.
Yeah.
We can say that. And is the cost of the B vaccination covered by health insurance? I'm not aware of any instances.
No, I don't know, actually. It certainly would be worth checking with your insurance policy, possibly. But I would doubt it, really.
Phil was in touch. Phil had a chest infection before Christmas and has had three lots of antibiotics to clear it. Phil got a sinus thing. After that, it's still affecting their ears. I'm not sure if Phil is a man or a woman. Do they need more antibiotics, they're wondering?
Probably not.
Okay.
Because, well, say three courses of antibiotics is pretty, it's a lot. Mm. And almost certainly what happened is Phil would have gotten maybe even a viral infection, possibly bacterial infection, and his or her airways would have become quite congested from the infection. The bacteria was killed by the antibiotics. And if it wasn't killed by one, it was killed by one or the other antibiotics. So the bacterial infection is gone. So there's no need to kind of give any more antibiotics. But what you need to do is clear the gunk, clear the congestion that's in the chest. And this is a thing that I think we've talked about it here before. People kind of, I think, have become lazy about trying to help themselves when they have an unpleasant symptom. Like if you have a cough, that cough is there for a purpose. It's meant to help you clear the crap out of your lungs, you know, or out of your upper airways. If you can't clear it, you steam yourself or you do something that'll actually help you clear it out. But you don't need an antibiotic. A tablet doesn't clear the crap out of your lungs. You do. It's the same with children. You know, if a child has a snotty nose, you know, there isn't a tablet to clear the snotty nose. You kind of need to clear the snot out of the nose. So, do you know what I mean? You need to be a bit more proactive about it. And if you don't clear that congestion in the lungs, then you're a sitting duck to develop another infection, because you've got this medium that's sitting in your lungs or your airways or your sinuses for that person as well. And because it's kind of this spongy, snotty material, it's a perfect medium for bacteria to work on.
So how does Phil clear Phil's ears?
Ears, often you kind of steam, actually the old-fashioned bowl of water and steam, and close your nose and blow like you would on a plane.
You'd think it's the nose that would help, though, wouldn't you?
It would, you see, because if it's sinuses and ears, it's not because there's any problem in his outer ear, it's because it's in the middle ear, which is connected to the back of the nose, to the back of the throat, so it's all the upper airways. Now, obviously, there can be situations where you have a very resistant infection that needs more antibiotics, but I'd actually suggest they need to have a chest x-ray before they'd have another antibiotic at all.
Okay.
And if the person is a smoker or asthmatic or COPD, there may be different issues there. But in a normal, healthy individual, you need to just get rid of the crap in the lungs.
Another listener has been in touch via the phones. They've had a serious reaction to a pain relief medication. I've told you which one. The doctor's changed the prescription, but our listener, she still has severe side effects of withdrawing from the drug. Any advice?
That particular one, which we won't mention, can actually be quite difficult to withdraw from. And always with withdrawal, slow and steady, and kind of do it as gently as you possibly can. Pain relief, I've said this before to you, it's one of the hardest things to treat is pain, which is ironic really, because it's what the most common symptom there will be. If you have kind of something simple, paracetamol is always kind of a first line drug. But if we move on to more serious pains, we go into drugs that always have side effects. None of them are free of side effects. Some of them are simple side effects. Some people don't get the side effects, but a lot of times they are quite complicated.
Sure.
And you end up sometimes giving somebody a painkiller that will cause a side effect and giving another tablet to stop the side effect. You know, and you can see how messy that gets.
Yeah.
So in a situation where the person needs a drug of the quality that you mentioned there, you know, they're talking about neuropathic pain, kind of nerve
pain. Serious
it's pain, serious pain. And it's difficult to treat. And it may be that there needs to be a much more kind of holistic, kind of psychological route taken on board here. Maybe see a pain specialist about it. You know, it's a difficult situation, and that drug was a reasonable thing to try, but it's not unusual to have a side effect to it and withdrawal from it.
Best of luck to the listener on that one. Betty was in touch. She's asking, what can she do to help with bad bronchitis, bronchitis even? She's had it for weeks.
Bronchitis is literally where you have kind of this productive cough. And it's not really coming from the spongy bit of your lungs, the lower bit of your lungs, it's coming from the bronchus, the big tube. It's very classic with smokers. If it persists more than 3 months, we call it chronic bronchitis, and we actually treat it with inhalers. If it's very productive, you would need to have something to get rid of some of that phlegm that's there. I would suggest that, you know, it depends on what Betty's history is. Is she a smoker? Is she not? Has she been unwell before? Is there any blood in it? Is there anything sinister about it? But she probably needs to be investigated and possibly put on some treatment for it.
Mary was in touch as well, actually, in a very similar one. She's been on antibiotics for quite some time, she says, and she's still coughing. It's actually for the last year she's had this issue. She said the doctor now says she might have COPD and she's worried.
Ah, okay. And that would be, COPD is like chronic bronchitis or emphysema. That's the kind of the cover name for them both. And it is where you have chronic cough or chronic productive of phlegm. Very most often associated with smoking, not always. People had exposure to smoke without smoking themselves over the years. If it is a chronic condition, it isn't reversible, but it can be treated and you can be managed very well. But it involves going on inhalers. You also need to have spirometry or lung function testing to see how your lungs are actually functioning in a given time. There is another thing that maybe, back to Phil, you know, you can have a condition called bronchiectasis where you have one little bit of your lung that an infection stays in and it doesn't clear with antibiotics. It's quite unusual, but just, you know, if you do need antibiotic after antibiotic after antibiotic, you really need to go that bit further now and get an x-ray and look to see that there's no other cause for it.
And Mary, who was in touch about COPD, there's a COPD support group
which meets
on Thursdays in Ennis
at
Cushnahona, I think it is. They've got a Facebook page as well. If you do a search for it, you'll find all the details.
And they're great about giving kind of good advice about managing it and exercise and, it's excellent.
And with respect to all your doctors, that's where you'll get the best support. People who've been there as patients will know,
absolutely,
I suffered from this. That sort of stuff. So hopefully that could be of use. It's a Thursday in Cushnahona. I forget the time, but if you look it up, you'll find it. I'll come back to questions in a second, but just an alert from our newsroom. If you're driving on the motorway, the M18, do take care because there's been a heavy hail shower in the past while, particularly on the Ardrahan side of Cushnahona, and a number of cars have left the road. Emergency services are at the scene. It's not known at this stage if there's any injuries, but Gardaí are asking people to reduce their speed. So that's in and around Cushnahona, particularly on the Galway side of Cushnahona, and that is on the M18 motorway. So do take care if you're in that area. If there's any further updates, we will bring them to you. And just before I let you go, Dr. Finn, I've actually got a couple more questions in relation to the meningitis vaccine.
Okay.
First of all, somebody else is asking about the age. If their child was born before the 1st of October 2016, they haven't gotten the MenB vaccine.
No, but they would have had the MenC. So that's important. Everybody, that's been available since 2000. Mm. So it's really important that people realise that they've got cover against that strain of meningitis, but not the MenB.
If you talk about older people being being kind of vulnerable,
anybody who's vulnerable, you see, anybody who's immunosuppressed or anything is susceptible to any infection.
Should they consider the meningitis vaccine, or is that too far?
That probably is too far, really, because the two really at-risk groups are children under 5, particularly under 1,
sure,
and then adolescents as well. There is always a peak, and you'll have these tragic stories of, you know, child in college or, you know, and there's
course,
a peak of it,
yes,
then, you know.
Yeah.
So that would be the other time that you would consider it.
And there are side effects. Somebody was asking about those. This is with regards to the meningitis vaccine.
There can be a side effect with any injection. And basically it is the same as with any injection. A bit sore in the arm where you've given it. Maybe a little temperature for possibly 24 hours afterwards. It's incredibly unusual to have any other side effects to it. There's always a possibility with any medication, be it aspirin, vaccine, anything,
fever's
that there could be
an
anaphylactic reaction, but it's incredibly rare. But fever, the temperature is common, and it's meant to be because you're trying to induce an immune response, so it's part of the showing that the vaccine is working.
I'll finish with this one. Sheila is telling me that she's woken up in the middle of the night choking, unusually enough.
First thing I would think, if it's new, of course, you might have a sore throat or a post-nasal drip. She might have kind of snot. I'm talking about snot lots.
Yeah, it's that time of the year. It's okay.
It's okay. Coming down the back of her throat when she's lying down, and that could be catching her and gagging her. Mm. Obviously, the other thing, though, if it's a chronic issue, could be what we call sleep apnea.
That's,
you know,
what I was thinking.
And
yeah.
That should be, you should look into it. Like if it's just a few days, you know, do the simple stuff. But if it's something that's going on regularly and it's disturbing your sleep, it's a condition that can be treated and can cause a lot of debilitation. It's not dangerous in itself, but it can increase your risk of heart disease and All sorts of chronic illnesses.
It's persistent, so it's, get it looked at.
Yeah, definitely.
Dr. Morfin, we appreciate your time. As always, thanks for
you're
joining us. Dr. Morfin from the Ennis Family Medical Centre. Our advice is just that. If you've got concerns about your own health, please, please, please do go to see your GP.
You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 midday.